This is the Forces Station.
This is the Forces Station.
With unprecedented access, Liz Mullen goes inside the wire at the Military Corrective Training Center, Colchester. BFBS, original Forces programs. The Glass House, shattering the myths.
Welcome to a military camp with a rather fearsome reputation.
I was scared to death. I watched a video about MCTC and I thought, oh my, how am I going here?
A little bit nervous, not knowing what to expect really.
There's a lot of horror stories about this place, isn't there? So
it's mainly when the guys first come in and the females. I think, if anything, they're still in a little bit shocked that they're actually at this establishment.
The Forces Station, BFBS,
The Glass House. Shattering the myths.
Located at Beer Church Camp on the outskirts of Colchester Garrison is the country's Tri-Service Military Corrective Training Centre, the MCTC. Its old nickname, the Glass House, was inherited from a predecessor in Aldershot and has sent shivers up many a military spine over the last few decades. Is it still so fearsome today? The only way to find out for sure is to go behind the wire and meet staff and detainees alike. I've been given escorted but unprecedented access to the centre to see if it's possible to shatter a few myths about the so-called Glass House. Carol McEntee-Taylor can shed light on how the centre earned its unfortunate reputation. She's the housing officer, but also a prolific military author who has written a book about the MCTC's history.
It was actually opened in 1944 as a German POW camp for Germans and obviously the Italians. When it first opened, there was nothing here. There was no Nissen huts or anything like that. It was just purely tents. There were 1,500 that arrived on the 20th of September, and within a few days, there were about 6,000 in here. They didn't get Nissen huts until the following year. And obviously, when the camp opened itself in 1947, those were the original Nissen huts that they were using then.
The regime in earlier years was undoubtedly rather more draconian than today.
I've been here 8 years and it's changed dramatically since I've been here, but I think it's always evolved. It's evolved gradually from the 1940s, 50s. It kind of reflects society's attitude towards offending, I think, and they've moved quite quickly as well in the MCTC, and they've just reflected those changes in people's attitudes.
The Commandant's morning haul-up could well be an indication of this change. This takes place in his office and must be a somewhat unnerving prospect.
Attention, step off quick. Yes, yes, yes.
One detainee due to return to the army at the end of his sentence has behaved well and worked hard. He's now being upgraded to stage 3, the highest level of freedoms and privileges. He's given a new tab to wear, denoting his new status.
It doesn't happen all that often that I have the privilege of upgrading a detainee from stage 2 to stage 3, so it gives me great pleasure to get you into my office this morning. I've read your report, and over the past sort of several weeks, the themes that are coming out is effort, determination, a very positive attitude, looking left and right and helping out the other detainees around you. So it is with real pleasure that I'm going to ask you to remove your present tab and put on this blue tab to show recognition of your stage 3 status.
Next up, a detainee who'll be leaving the services after completing his sentence. While at the MCTC, the man has made the most of the centre's training courses to fit him for a civilian career, and he now looks slightly bemused at the Commandant's warm farewell.
I'm pretty conscious that I am probably the last military officer you're going to see.
That's right.
I can see a wry smile on your face. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to shake you by the hand, I'm going to thank you for your service, I'm going to wish you the very best of luck for your life outside the army.
Thank you very much, sir.
Any questions or complaints for me?
No, sir.
Lieutenant Colonel Gary McDade is the Commandant, and he also holds the post of Commanding Officer of the Military Provost Staff, the MPS, the regiment which runs the facility.
The whole ethos behind MCTC is about rewarding effort and determination. And so this morning I was able to upgrade one detainee up to stage 3. He's probably been here for at least 4 to 5 months in order to reach that status. If he gets up to stage 3, the main privileges which come with it is, first of all, you have what's called trustee status. They don't get locked down in the evenings. They have increased freedoms. They can move around the establishment unescorted, to increase money at the end of each week that they can spend in the shop. But I think most importantly for the detainees, the two most important things that come with stage three, firstly, is they can apply to go out for 3 days, either back to their unit if they're soldiering on, or back into a society to go and do some job interviews if they're going to be leaving the services. And I think most importantly of all, they can sign themselves out on parole on a Saturday, and they can head down into Colchester, go and have a cup of coffee, do a little bit of shopping, etc., and enjoy some of the freedoms that they're not entitled to on stage one and stage two.
Here's a man due for discharge from the army and nearing the end of a year's sentence. He's been making the most of his stage three privileges.
I've been working at Castle Park for the last 2 months. And it's just helping out. It's basically like a volunteer, doing things like painting fences, cutting hedges, yeah, and litter picking.
You might almost be tempted to go in that line of work, maybe?
Definitely not down here. And I've been offered a job through the work placement, so the offer's there, yeah. You know, if I wanted to stay down here, then obviously I'd have a job.
Coming in here, knowing you're due to be discharged, how does it actually compare with what you thought it might be, would you say?
I'd heard some horror stories about this place, yeah, before I got here, but I'd also heard some other stories as well, of there being basically like butlins. There's a mixture of the two, really. It can be, anyway. You know, they will shout at you. But they're also quite helpful as well.
Regimental Sergeant Major of the MCTC, and therefore of the Military Provost Staff, is Warrant Officer Class 1 James Moore.
One of the things that's commented on by outside visitors is how quiet the place is. They expect lots of stamping of feet and lots of shouting everywhere all the time, but we don't operate like that anymore. We operate on respect for others, so they respect us and we respect them. You know, there is a time and a place when we have to shout and we have to use a disciplinarian inside of us, but generally we operate on respect, so that's why there's the absence of the noise and the shouting.
The modern day MCTC consists of low-rise brick buildings surrounded by trees and shrubs, rather like a motorway hotel, but that would be a misleading impression of life here, which is perhaps not so very different from a Phase 1 training camp.
I think it's very similar. You know, I'm an ex-depot instructor myself. A lot of the staff are ex-depot instructors as well. And the army's changed, the way the instructors have changed. You know, when I went through the depot, it was very much, you know, getting shouted at every day. And I remember that and didn't particularly like that type of style of instruction. So when I went to the depot, I had a very firm idea in my head how I was going to be an instructor. And that's how I was. And again, it was commanding respect, you know, respecting them, they respect us. And then they worked hard for us as well. And it seemed to work, and that's the same model we use here. Some of the young DUS that come in here have never had that hug, that arm round the shoulder to say, right, you know, you can do this, you're a good person, you can do this, let's get things back on the straight and narrow and let's get back to where you should be.
This is BFBS.
The Glass House. Shattering the myths.
Detainees spend their time in one of two companies. A company, those who will be returning to the services, or D company, those destined to be discharged for life in Civvy Street. The early morning room inspection in one of the communal sleeping quarters on A company lines is underway, preceded by much hasty mopping and cleaning of floors and ablutions, getting lockers in tidy order, and the occupants themselves presentable, ready for the beady eye of their company Sergeant Major, Warrant Officer Class 2 Neil Houston. The whole place smells wonderfully of bleach, and I just wish my house was as clean as this.
Morning, gentlemen.
Morning, sir.
I'm on week 3 in A company, currently employed on military training, sir.
Excellent, thank you. How you finding military training this morning?
Yes, that's all right, sir.
Settling okay?
Yes, all right, sir. Yeah.
Week 3?
Week 3, sir.
Okay. And how you finding the physical element?
Yeah, the physical's good, sir, yeah. I'm naturally fit anyway, sir. So.
Naturally fit, excellent. That's what we like to hear. Modern Army 2015. Okay, it's a good effort on your lock of that. Yeah. You have any assistance with that?
No, I'm just copying off other people, sir.
Okay, good. Okay, gentlemen, well done overall. A few points to work on. Do it now, tomorrow morning, for the OG impression. Get amongst it. Okay, staff, make sure that these are up to standard for tomorrow morning. Okay, that concludes your inspection. Any questions?
No, sir.
Okay, thanks, fellas. Well done. Revision!
WO2 Houston makes it clear it's all about discipline.
Part of the daily routine at MCTC is to take sole responsibility for the cleanliness of their own accommodation and the communal areas. All the ablution cleaning equipment is provided for them, and they have to reach a certain standard on every single weekday. So it becomes somewhat of a short, sharp shock, which is almost underpinning what we're trying to do here as well, to sort of refocus them. I think the uniformity is key, and what it does is promote the buddy-buddy system, which underpins a lot of the work that the service personnel expect. To have uniformity across the board ensures that a standard of inspection and a standard of scoring, and one really shouldn't differ from the next guy that is in the same room.
But still, no shouting.
We find that the encouragement side achieves better results. I think screaming and bawling is perhaps an outdated concept, certainly really wouldn't work too well here at MCTC. We want them to respond, we want them to achieve high standards.
When the DUS first arrive, there's a period of settling in before, as we've heard, they're divided into either A Company or D Company. The senior non-commissioned officer in charge of Inductions Platoon is Staff Sergeant Matthew Gorski, the first figure of authority the newcomers have to face.
The first thing we're going to undertake is the individuals are going to be booked into the main company desk, asking individuals if they've had a chance to make a telephone call back to their loved ones. We will then move them straight round to my office, ascertaining whether they've got any residual risk to themselves, any finance problems that require intervention immediately, any welfare issues, any alcohol problems, any drug-related problems.
And those aren't the only important aspects of life at the centre which have to be passed on.
Equality and diversity, the points of contact, the befrienders system, so arrivals guys that can come and talk to these guys at their level, so DUSs that actually know the establishment itself. So we're looking initially at the care of the individual, and sometimes it can be quite easy because some of the guys come in with no problems, some of the guys come in with problems and won't tell you their problems initially until we build up that rapport process, and some come in and they've got quite a lot, and they come in with open arms and they want all the assistance.
Military personnel are held here for sentences of more than 14 days and potentially up to 2 years. But in practice, it would be very unusual to serve that full sentence. It's more likely that with remission, a detainee would serve some 16 months or so. Further remission could be earned by getting good reports. The DUS, detainees under sentence, are never referred to as prisoners. But really, is it a prison or is it not? Colonel Gary McDade again.
Well, this is a tri-service corrective training facility, and its foundations are on military training, a military ethos, discipline and respect. And that respect goes both ways. And through a combination of those characteristics, we have a process of rewarding people, as we've discussed. We are different to prisons in that regard, but Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Prisons have been visiting MCTC since 2004 to provide some independent monitoring of the regime and the institution here. And there have been a series of inspections since then. The most recent took place in late 2014 with a report published early this year. It was a very positive report, and lines such as a very positive inspection or a model custodial institution is certainly something which we can be proud of. However, we are very aware of the 20-plus recommendations that we can look at to improve, mainly quite small observations, cosmetic or housekeeping. Of course, we can't rest on our laurels, and there are always areas in which we can improve the regime here.
So a prison is one thing it is not. And of course, many of the offences, such as going absent without leave, wouldn't put you behind bars in the civilian world.
The cohort we have here and the community within MCTC is different to what you'd find in a prison, and perhaps at the lower end of the risk spectrum. That said, we do have a small number of higher risk offenders, but certainly the majority of people are towards the lower end.
If more evidence were needed to prove this is not a prison, perhaps this is it. It's hard to imagine a convict from a civilian prison returning sometime later as a member of staff. But the MCTC's particular brand of redemption means that former detainees in some cases can do just that. The officer commanding D Company, that's those due for discharge into Civvy Street, is Captain Mal Reedman, and he's a man with a bit of MCTC previous.
Yeah, that's correct. In 1998, I was here as a soldier under sentence, as it was then, as a naughty boy back in that day. So I was in A Company. I was awarded a period of detention for 6 months. Luckily for me, my appeal came through, and after 6 weeks of being here, I was released immediately.
Being together for days, weeks, occasionally months at a time It's no surprise that the detainees sometimes find themselves making good mates.
One of the lads just left today, and I told him I had him on Facebook and stuff, and we keep in contact. But I've made some really good friends while I've been in here. I didn't think I would have. I thought they would have been, obviously, all naughty lads, but just want to mess about and all that kind of stuff, but it's really not. Do we have some really good lads in here?
Discipline equals routine, a familiar feature of life in the services anyway. Here again is the RSM W01, James Moore.
We still have a place of discipline. They still have to march everywhere. We still have drill. They still have to obey the orders from the staff. At 6 o'clock in the morning, the staff will wake them up. You get up straight away as soon as you're told to get up. They then have an hour to get the ablutions done and to sort the rooms and the bed spaces out ready for the morning inspection. They're unlocked at 7, they go to breakfast. And again, everybody needs to eat breakfast. You know, because of the routine and the regime here, you need to have the calories on board to be able to operate. So that's explained fully to them as well, that they will eat every single meal that's given to them. And the meals are designed to give them the calories for the regime for the day. After breakfast, they'll have the morning inspection. Straight after inspection, they'll then get what we call distributed, so doctor's appointments, dental appointments. If they haven't got any appointments, then they'll go on training or education, depending on what company they're in. And then they're employed from 8:45 in the morning to 12:30. They'll then come back to the companies, have lunch, and then they're distributed again at 13:30 and employed from 13:45 to 16:30 hours.
Mealtimes, or diets as they're referred to here, are another strictly regulated routine.
Quiet.
It's time to get the detainees into what I'd call lunch.
Owen McClelland, I'll listen in the company. Right! Great, chef! Move to the left. Left! Turn! Stage three.
As they're going down, the staff will be counting the detainees, so we'll all give each other a check so that we know how many detainees we've got. So we've got 22. I would say to a member of staff when he passes me 22 detainees, and he would confirm me back.
Staff Sergeant Gavin Dickinson.
The staff are all spread out. We have a member of staff standing at the door to stop any detainees that would wish to leave. We also have a member of staff standing by the alarm bell. Should we have an incident, then obviously the member of staff would press that alarm bell, ensuring that all the other members of staff within MCTC would react to a situation. We also have another member of staff on the hot plate. They look at the detainees and make sure that they're not taking more food than they're allowed. Evening diets, what we do is any meal that's come for the detainees during the day, we will bring it round, sort it out, and then one at a time we'll call out the detainee's name. He'll come, we'll open the letter, we'll check the letter to make sure it hasn't got anything in there that they're not allowed to have, i.e. stamps, money, etc. Once we're happy with that, we'll give the detainee his meal. He'll put it in his pocket. Obviously, they're free to read it when they get back to their room after diets, after evening meal.
We'll return to the scoff later. Being locked in your room from 7 p.m. till 7 a.m. sounds extremely boring to me, but being bored is not encouraged. Here again is the RSM, James Moore.
When the door gets locked, they're allowed to watch TV, so they've got TVs in the rooms to keep them up to date with current affairs, things like that, football programmes, normal stuff that soldiers like to watch. A lot of them read. We have a lot of board games, a lot of games. We encourage letter writing. A lot of the young people that come in here have never really written letters home before. We encourage that. The staff will talk them through how to write a letter without text speaking it. A lot of them will sit around the table, they'll write letters, they'll speak to each other, they'll get to know each other. And it's very much about the teamwork and the team bond in the room. And you see it. As soon as a new person comes into the room, a new member, they're around them and they're trying to help him. They're helping him put his kit in the right place, sort his bed space out, tell him exactly what we do, what we don't do, all the stuff that you'd expect soldiers to do.
All personal effects, including mobile phones, are taken away on arrival, although they do have access to important phone numbers. They're allowed 30 minutes of phone calls per week, and there's also 2 hours of visiting time each month. Due to return to service, this young woman is not just one of the few Royal Navy personnel in custody, but also, at the time of my visit, the only female detainee.
My family come to visit pretty much every second weekend, if they can make it. But I keep in contact with my family on the phone as well, and my friends I write letters to, and the mail system's quite good at getting here quick and on time.
Was it difficult, first of all, to give up your mobile phone?
No, I didn't think so, but I know a lot of people do struggle when they come here.
Of course, detainees aren't getting paid, so there is a controlled amount of spending money available, which rises with the detainee's status level. Known as a reimbursement allowance, it can be spent in the camp's own shop.
They must buy the essentials first, so shoe polish, wash and shaving kit must be bought first. Then they buy the sweeties, the cigarettes and everything else that they want after that.
It comes as a surprise, perhaps, that those under sentence can smoke.
We come under different rules because it comes under custody rules for smoking in the workplace and in the premises. So we have separate rooms, we have non-smoking rooms and we have smoking rooms. But a lot of the DUS that come in want to try and stop smoking as well, and we have a very good programme where we can signpost them to stop smoking.
This is BFBS.
The Glass House. Shattering the myths.
The senior staff member at the Military Corrective Training Centre is actually the Deputy Commandant, due to the fact that the Commandant himself retains his own cap badge and is posted on. The holder of that deputy post is former military police officer Major Leighton Snook.
Under Army 2020, the MPS expanded, and we formed as a regiment on the 1st of December, which at the same time was the formation of 1MP Brigade. We work for the Provost Marshal Army. The Provost Marshal commands 1MP Brigade. We are an integral part of 1MP Brigade. And across the UK, we have professionalised and rationalised the custody facilities. Under Army 2020, we now have 7 service custody facilities across the UK, one in Colchester, one in Bulford, Catterick, Edinburgh, Woolwich, one in Aldergrove, and one being built in Stafford. So there are 7 facilities out there manned by 11 MPS in each one that has taken that burden away from units and professionalised it across the UK.
So there's clearly been a change in the way the centre's modern message is put over.
I think there has. I transferred to the MPS in 1996, and we always achieved resettlement and rehabilitation back then, but I think today it's fair to say that we are much more scientific, much more specific and much more focused in how we deliver offender management, offending behaviour interventions. For example, I chair a monthly offender management working group focused exclusively on positive outcomes to detainees, and I think that's made a huge difference in taking things forward and helping those individuals, the soldiers, sailors, airmen and women who leave here, return to the service, and more capable servicemen and women, and for those leaving on discharge, that they can make a positive contribution to society and not become a burden to it.
Officer Commanding D Company and former detainee himself, Captain Mal Reedman, says members of D Company aren't necessarily harder to discipline, but they can be harder to motivate.
The guys are being discharged from the services, some are happy with that, some want to soldier on but have no choice. And so when they first arrive, it's slightly difficult to get them to engage with the regime and be more motivated. But certainly after a couple of weeks of realising that we are friend, not foe, and what's on offer here.
Officer Commanding A Company is that rare breed in the centre, a Royal Navy officer. Lieutenant Adam Corden is one of 6 naval personnel based at the centre. It's an interesting opportunity for him to learn more about the RAF and the Army. Adam Corden doesn't read too much into the fact that detainees from the senior service are very much in a minority.
I've got 1 in A Company at the moment. We had a Royal Marine released at the beginning of the week, but we don't get very many. It's because the Royal Navy's smaller, I think, than the Army, to be honest. The Navy are pretty much proportionally represented in the detainee population.
Walking around the centre, it's actually very hard to tell whether A Company outnumbers D or vice versa. Mal Reedman.
It's almost a 50-50 split at the moment. Sometimes it does go up with regards to a D Company having more and A Company having less, and sometimes it does switch round.
Staff and detainees alike have the benefit of the camp's spacious gym. Here's WO2 Rod Bell of the Royal Army Physical Training Corps.
Physical training is paramount within the services, and this is to ensure that personnel are able to withstand, the vigours of service life. Therefore, physical fitness, is a fundamental requirement, for every soldier and officer to maintain general health, and job performance. And more importantly, operational commitments. If our troops are fit, they're going to be able to conduct, their tasks and jobs efficiently. They all come here at different levels of fitness, and but when they all leave here, you know, they're all really good, you know, on a very high standard of fitness when they leave. And without forgetting about, you know, D Company, they're equally of importance, you know, because they're going to go into civilian life, and we must obviously make sure that they go back and give them, you know, the best start back into civilian life that we can do, and physical fitness is important for them.
Detainees might also be taken on adventure training, which Rod says is integral to army life.
They get lots from the adventure training, team cohesion, team bonding, and again it can prepare them, you know, for operations as well. And it also improves the morale, you know, of the troops here and develops leadership. It's a great escape for these guys to leave the company lines, you know, the climbing wall. It's a fantastic facility, as well as the spinning bikes. It's a great hall, you know, there's lots of space here. And we also have a fairly new gymnasium next door. All the machines are only 2 years old. Outside the gymnasium, we've got an obstacle course that we take them on as well. That's important to keep them sort of up to date with their skills and drills and techniques there.
Education Centre Manager Katie Springett is a former school art teacher who's been a head of education at Colchester United Football Club and Queen's Park Rangers. She's an MOD civilian like all the education staff at the centre. It's not just the imminent service leavers here who are offered training.
There are opportunities for A Company detainees to come and join us, for instance, for functional skills, English and maths. Obviously very important for their future possible promotions. There are opportunities for them to do courses like the ECDL to support their work back at their units. IT is one of the significant qualifications that they might get involved with.
But for D Company, there's a host of practical courses.
We have a number of workshops here. The plumbing element is part of the basic construction skills. It also includes tiling, painting and decorating, health and safety, and we're about to introduce an electrical element as well. We have a welding workshop. We also have a garage skills workshop, and we deliver the IMI high performance tyre fitting qualification.
Over in the tiling workshop, we find Colin Pethick, a former infantry soldier who simply proved to be too good, being able to fix absolutely anything. At the moment, I find him overseeing the Level 1 City and Guild students. All the good work being undertaken by his D Company tilers is to be taken down and the wall surfaces reused for the next students. But they do get to keep one aspect of their work.
If they've got young kids, boys or girls, they'll make something which they can take home, paint for them. We do ornate red roses, things like that, which they can paint, give to their girlfriends, their wives or whatever, to say sorry.
Right, I'm just going to come over here and admire this work. The spacing's really good. Not that I'm a tiling expert, but it's fantastic. How long have you been in the MCTC now?
I've been here just over 2 months. Still got another 2 months to go.
Well, you're halfway through and you're learning these skills. Did you realise you'd be able to learn these kind of things here?
No, I didn't. Not at first, no. I only learned when I ran the first week that I got here.
Is this really what you might want to do?
I'm not sure, really. I still haven't decided what I want to do, because I still won't be leaving here and leaving the army straight away. I still got a year left to do.
Oh, I see, right. So you've got to go back in for a while.
Yeah, I still do, yeah.
That's an interesting sort of mixture, isn't it? A crossed with D Company.
Yeah, I still might end up going over to the A Company just via my sign-off.
The Forces Station. BFBS.
The Glass House. Shattering the myths.
Another crucial aspect of welfare at the MCTC is helping those whose behaviour may be more challenging or who simply have more problems to overcome. Kirsten Chamley is the interventions manager.
Detainees arrive at MCTC with a variety of issues and complaints, or maybe just beliefs, and everybody's different. So for us, it's our business to work with them to identify what triggered their motivation for their offending behaviour. The interventions then are to help them address those problems and those issues that have helped them to offend in the first place. We've got a number of different forms of interventions. Some take place on a one-to-one basis. Those might be something like addressing drugs and alcohol use. It could be something such as a bereavement that's triggered emotional management concerns or some aggression that they can't get to grips with. We also have some accredited offending behaviour programmes. They are accredited because we can't follow people out into the community to make sure they haven't gone on to re-offend, so we get in the accredited programmes because we know they're proven to reduce reoffending.
These can be in a group scenario or one-to-one sessions, but they have one vital thing in common.
What they tackle is people's ability to problem solve or manage their own emotions, their anger management. It might be to do with domestic abuse. It might be positive relationships, not just in a sense of a couple, a spouse. It could be with their parents or their boss or all those people around us, those support networks.
Back to our one and only female detainee.
It's quite a lonely experience at times, but I feel that I can cope with it just like any of the males here at the moment.
At least your platoon commander is a female, so if you wanted to confide anything that perhaps the men wouldn't understand, at least you've got her.
Yes, there's a thing called F-Watch here, which means that there's a female member of staff on duty 24/7, so there's always a female around to speak to if I need to.
How long have you been here so far?
2 months I've been here now.
How long to go?
Another 2 months left. Sometimes it can be quite stressful here when you know how long you've got left, and sometimes you get a bit worried, but it's nice to, there's not a lot of shouting that goes on.
When you first came here, were you worried and frightened?
A little bit nervous, not knowing what to expect really, but when I got here all the staff were very friendly, so they settle you in quite quickly, so get used to routine.
You can't lapse from that routine, you'll go back sort of up to scratch.
Yeah, that's the idea behind the system here. They keep you busy at all times so that you're ready to go back, like fully fit, ready to get back straight into work.
As an A Company platoon commander, Staff Sergeant Stephanie Parkin agrees that having women to talk to is important for female detainees.
Definitely. Not necessarily just being the platoon commander, because we've got other females here that aren't platoon commanders, they're platoon sergeants or they work in other departments. It does give them that warm, fuzzy feeling that there are females around that should they speak to somebody and it's about something quite sensitive that they don't want to talk to a guy about, then, yeah, it does help out, definitely.
Spiritual welfare also plays an important role. Detainees have rights when it comes to following their chosen faiths. Padre Ian Coulson holds regular and special services as required at the church on camp that's arguably grander than the one on the nearby army family's estate.
I do all the normal things that a normal army padre does, so I see people for all manner of things, ranging from, padre, how do I say my prayers, through to padre, I've had a letter from home and I don't know what to do, through to padre, can you give my mum a ring? So all those sorts of things are the things I deal with every day.
The welfare of the staff is not forgotten.
I joined the MPS to help people. I didn't realise maybe sometimes the staff need just as much help as the DUS.
WO2 Glenn Woolley is Staff Welfare Warrant Officer and has a wealth of relevant experience behind him, especially since joining the Military Brothers staff.
I started off as a sergeant in A Company for about 2.5 years, helping the guys that were heading back into the forces. I then went on posting down to Portsmouth to help train the Military Provost Guard Service. I then came back as a staff sergeant in A Company. I'd ran the custody facility up in ITC Catterick for 2.5 years before returning as the training wing sergeant major. The staff are only human, so, everybody has their problems. People just need that little bit of help sometimes, somewhere to speak to.
The MPS has only recently started recruiting corporals instead of sergeants and above. Among them, but about to be promoted, Corporal Emma Watson.
I transferred over from the Royal Signals, and since I've transferred into the MPS, I work in the training wing, and all we do is military train all the DUS that are going back to the forces on a daily basis, so we'll have them from the morning until the last lesson at the end of the day. We do all the MATs, which is what the Army do, but the Navy and the RAF also do the same training, so it's a bit difficult at times, but we do weapon training. We've just done navigation today. We'll do CBRN. We do counter IED, military drills, all different kind of training is what we do on a daily basis. It's quite similar to being at a Phase 1 unit, which is what I did before, which I love doing. When you first get them day one, week one, to when they leave, the change in them is enormous, and that's down to the military training that they receive while they're here.
But how does Emma cope with being a young woman in a challenging and largely male environment? Does it actually help to be female?
I certainly notice a difference with the DUS, the way that they are with me and male members of staff. They're a lot more lenient with myself, and that is probably down to being a female.
Female, yes, but don't expect her to get emotional.
They come through that quick, and the sentences are that short nowadays, like 21 days, 30 days. by the time they've gone for inductions, we'll only get them for 1 or 2 weeks and then they're out. But if you get a detainee that's in for a long length of time, then yeah, you do get a bond with them, but the minute they go, that's it.
Staff Sergeant Stephanie Parkin also has to measure up to male colleagues and deal with any cheek from the DUS.
I think because on the face of it, they'll look at me and think that maybe I'm a bit of an easier target than your tall ex-guardsman that stood in front of them. But that's when it's a personality-driven thing where you need to make sure that they realise that you're not an easy washover. You know, you're not going to be somebody that's going to be easily influenced to get what they want. You have to be a robust person, I suppose, possibly more so than the male that comes across to do the same job. But as soon as they do see that, they tend to, especially in A Company, respect the fact that you are not this easy kind of person, that you are going to give them not a hard time as such, but you're going to be just as robust with them as any male soldier would be as well.
Stephanie's had all-round experience, having worked with both companies of detainees in her time.
I started off my career in the MPS as a platoon sergeant in D Company, and they are generally more challenging individuals, especially when there is a lot of them. It does test you into personal skills and how you deal with those individuals when they are challenging you, which did set me off in a good stead, really, I think, to then go to A Company, which, don't get me wrong, has its problems, but the individuals generally aren't as difficult as they can be.
We've heard how the gym and PT in general burns up the calories, so there's no shortage of appetite when it comes to mealtimes. Earlier on, Staff Sergeant Gavin Dicko Dickinson, a platoon commander with A Company, marched the hungry detainees into the diets hall. As we rejoin him, he's watching over his charges with a somewhat envious eye.
I can honestly say that the food that the detainees get is better than the food that we get in the Warrant Officers and Sergeants Mess. The food for the detainees in MCTC is second to none. We very, very rarely get complaints about the standard of food because it's so good. Right, so what we do now is we basically just watch them eat. They're only allowed to talk to the people that are on their table, and they've got to keep the talking down to a minimum. They aren't allowed to talk to detainees that are sat on another table. We don't want any shouting across the diet hall. Every mealtime, a different table will go up first. The reason being, because if the food runs out, then the same people are getting the not-so-good food at the end of the day. Once they've finished eating, stage three being the highest trustee status, they will be allowed to leave the diet hall early and march their own way back to the rooms. However, stage one, stage two and stage two alpha, we wait until everybody's finished. Once everybody's finished, I'll tell them all to sit up, be quiet, and then I'll get them to exit the diet hall one table at a time. And then they'll march back round to the company gate to be again counted by the members of staff. We stand and watch them eat their meals, and then obviously when we finish shift, that's when we go and eat in our mess.
This is BFBS.
The Glass House. Shattering the myths.
With reservists playing an increasing role in Force's life, the MPS has its reserve company too.
By and large, we're recruiting ex-regular NCOs, a strong cohort, and ideally ex-regular NCOs who are currently working within the custodial care sector, whether they be detention, custody escort officers, or indeed prison officers. So we need that combination of the custodial skill set as well as the soldiering skills to complement that. So it's very much a soldier first and custodian second.
That's Captain Neil Wilson, Permanent Staff Admin Officer for the MPS Reserve, which Neil says can fit in nicely with civilian life.
I mean, that's where the MPS Reserve job offer is absolutely ideal. We are a nationally recruited reserve unit, and as such, we don't have weekly drill nights or monthly training exercises at a weekend. We only require our soldiers to do a minimum of 19 training days a year. So by and large, that's a two-week annual deployment exercise and a four-day MATS package where we brush up on all those military skills and all the rest of it. For someone leaving the services, going into civilian work, I think the 19 days is actually an ideal setup. So for us, the future's great.
But be careful if you're a reservist with the MPS and you commit a misdemeanour. Your offence might be minor in the world of your day job, but if it was in your forces time, yes, you could ironically end up in the MCTC. And as with any reservist, you wouldn't simply be disrupting your military career, but your civilian job too. Captain Mal Reedman,
Yeah, it does have a knock-on effect to their civilian career. Some are quite fortunate. Their employers are understanding and keep their jobs open for them. Others, not so fortunate, and will have to start again, really, looking for a job.
So what do members of the Military Provost staff get out of doing what could be seen as a somewhat sensitive and isolated job? Staff Sergeant Matthew Gorse gave Inductions Platoon.
I wanted something that kept me a little bit more interesting and something that challenged me, not only physically, but mentally. This job is so diverse because one day you're a disciplinarian as well as a custodian, but you need to flip that hat and be a welfare officer at the same time. So it is very, very diverse, but very enjoyable at the same time. It's not only good to see the guys come through this system, but to come through my department and then potentially after their length of sentence to come back to you and say, do you know what, staff, at the beginning I was really disgruntled with which direction I was going to go, what I was going to do, and you gave me a bit of direction and guidance through the staff as well here, and I just wanted to come back and say thank you to you, which goes a long way here.
Mal Reedman.
I think OCD Company and the staff within D Company enjoy being with the D Company. You have a different mindset. Yeah, each day is a different challenge.
The RSM, James Moore.
It's very rewarding. You get an individual who comes in who may have went off the rails, lost his way a little bit, and then by the end of the sentence, you feel a real sense of worth once you've helped the individual rebuild their confidence up, and then you see them, you know, the army's got smaller, so we do see a lot more of them now when we're out on exercise, and you see somebody and they'll come across and they'll say, oh, staff, do you remember me? And they'll have rank on them. You think, oh, really well done, you know, you've done really well, and it's good to see. And then in the civilian side, some of them will write back to us and say, you know, thank you for this, I've got a really good job now, I've got a house, you know, I'm settled with my girlfriend, we're now expecting a child, and that sense of worth is fantastic. We've still got links into all our corps and the regiments that we come from, so we can reach back and say, you know, how's he doing or how's she doing, are they doing well, and in the main we'll get really good feedback about them.
But what about the detainees who are still serving their sentences? Can they see the positive side of their experience yet?
Here, there's a lot of opportunities to take advantage of, and I think I've done so to as much as I could to my extent of my sentence. And anyone who's here for longer can get a lot more than I did out of this place.
Do you think you'll go back as a better member of naval personnel?
I'd like to think so. I've had a lot of time to think here, a lot of time to improve on things that maybe I won't get a chance to when I'm back in my unit. So hopefully it'll be a better experience all round.
And of course, life can't always be a bed of plaster moulded roses. This man takes a realistic view.
You've always got roles to stand by, and you know, you've got this certain discipline that you always adhere to. So coming here, it's not really that much difference from what you expect to in army life anyway, except you can't go home at the end of the day. It does affect your family life in a bit, and it's just like being on another tour, to be honest.
Those who return to life in the forces seem generally to have a successful outcome. Lieutenant Adam Corden and Staff Sergeant Stephanie Parkin.
I see every detainee who's being released from A Company to give them their final report, and I would say that they're almost universally positive about the MCTC. Obviously, there are always some who maybe haven't enjoyed their time here. And we also get feedback from units. And whilst I can't give you statistics, anecdotally, the majority of A Company detainees go on to do well, or at least better than they were doing before they came to the MCTC.
Being A Company, been outside of obviously the Colchester area in a military environment, I've had people come up to me and say, oh, hello staff, remember me, I was with you not so long ago, and it actually is quite nice.
Kirsten Chamley, the interventions manager, also finds that good feedback makes everything worthwhile.
The biggest selling point for us is the reaction from the detainees themselves. So quite often we'll get people coming back, shaking our hands, writing lovely glowing responses and letting us know how they're getting on in the community. And that really is why we do what we do, is to make that difference to people's lives. It can be very satisfying, but it can also be very challenging.
One A Company detainee about to return to service life has been described here as exemplary.
There's a lot of positive to take away from here. I've got a good couple of courses under my belt since I've been here. I've done my level 2 English and maths. That's something that needed doing. I've done a lot of alcohol courses since I've been here, and thinking skills and stuff.
I think I'm going to take it as a life experience, just a learning curve. When I get back to my unit, I can, in myself, I know that I've accomplished this and I've got through it, so I can get through pretty much anything.
One man's been telling me that he's learned to be aware that peer pressure can take you down the wrong path.
It's all about your pride in the army. And in here, there's no one to test your pride, so you can be yourself.
I think it should be like that in the army. You should be able to be yourself and not put on a front.
The contrast to the bad old days is an interesting subject, which writer Carol McIntyre Taylor relished while writing her history of the MCTC, which we mentioned earlier. Carol had appealed far and wide for memories from former staff and detainees alike, and some aspects of the response appealed to her sense of humour.
One of the things I liked was the different way they saw the military detention camp in the 50s and 60s in particular. I'd have guys ringing me up going, oh, it was absolutely dreadful, it was a terrible place, this, that and the other. And then I'd have guys from the Marines or the Guards saying, oh, it was nothing, you know, it was just like our basic training, which always made me laugh. But yeah, I mean, there's obviously the National Service guys who were supposed to sign up for 2 years doing four or five because they kept ending up in here, and obviously it didn't count with their time, so they just ended up even longer. There were the letters that were addressed to the motorcycle training centre, which I thought was quite amusing. So obviously I hadn't told their family where they were going. They were going to the motorcycle training centre.
The military provost staff have supported and continue to support MOD requirements on operations. But when not deployed, the service they provide is one they embrace with enthusiasm. The deputy commandant sums it up.
The punishment is the removal of their liberty. So we are not here to punish them. We're actually here to help them. And we are absolutely focused on rehabilitation and resettlement for those individuals, whether they return to the service or leaving the services.
And a final word from Lieutenant Colonel Gary McDade, the Commandant of the Military Corrective Training Centre.
From my experience here at MCTC, there has been nothing quite as rewarding so far as the detainees who come into my office before they leave, saying how they've learned about themselves, they've been listened to by the MPS staff, and generally just thanking the staff for what they have done. And so I see this as a really growing organisation with some really positive opportunities, and if people are up for the challenge, then they should get in touch.
The MCTC is unique in the British Forces world. People aren't ever going to be queuing up to get in, but its image as the glass house is a thing of the past, and it hasn't taken too hefty a stone to shatter some of those myths.
BFBS, original Forces programmes. The Glass House, shattering the myths.